Coming up on this episode of the Star Wars Report, we talk all about The Phantom Menace 3D. Our three, hopefully four, panelists are going to discuss it in detail, the latest Star Wars experience in the theaters. Aaron Goins joins us, one of our writers for the Star Wars Report website. Awesome fellow, we're so excited to have him here. We're going to talk about the latest Clone Wars episode, a new George Lucas interview. All this is coming up on the 33rd episode of the Star Wars Report, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. Let's do this.
We sit going home! Yee-hee!
So wizard, Annie! Misa's starting pretty okey day with a pretty morning munchin'. And then I started a podcast called The Star Wars Report. Hey, everybody, welcome to The Star Wars Report. So excited that you decided to tune into this podcast episode. I'm one of your hosts for this week, Riley Blanton. Thank you so much for tuning in. And with me, joining me as always, my dear sister, Bethany. How are you doing today?
Greetings, universe. Welcome to our humble show.
That's right. If you're to all of our, shout out to our listeners on Jupiter.
Yes.
No, seriously, we have worldwide listeners on Middle Earth Network Radio live each week. I said it in the tease, and here he is, Mr. Aaron Goins. Welcome once again to the Star Wars Report.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Now, Mark is missing from our podcast right now.
Conspicuous
spy. But don't punish him for this, because he is doing something in ways much more better.
There's this new movie in the theaters, I hear about.
Yeah. He is watching The Phantom Menace in theaters with his kids.
The municipal bands.
Right now.
Actually, the end credits were just rolling. If it's showtime, I have to do some quick math. Oh, drat. His showing was at 2:55 his time, and we're in Eastern Standard Time. So as I calculate, the credits are about to start rolling. They're in Augie's Municipal Band right now. But that'll all be coming up. We're going to talk a little bit about Clone Wars and some new news. Ahmed Best is once again in the news. We'll be talking about that in just a moment here, but we're saving the best for last. Once Mark gets back from the theater, he will be joining us live with his almost instantaneous reactions. I'm saying by Attack of the Clones, we need like a live commentary from the theater. I just realized that may not be the best idea. I was like, that sounds... I shouldn't have just opened my mouth. Wow. But yeah, let's get right to it. Let's talk about some of the latest news.
We have something to report.
Come closer, I have good news.
Data brought to us by the Bothan spies.
We send a clear transmission.
There it is. Listen.
Yes, once again, Ahmed Best is back in the news. This is an article from Club Jade. He talks about a cut scene from Revenge of the Sith featuring Jar Jar Binks, everyone's lovable favorite Gungan. The Phantom Menace 3D is out this weekend, and Entertainment Weekly checked in with a man behind Jar Jar Binks, Ahmed Best, who gave his thoughts on the Gungan's diminished role in Episode 3. Best also mentioned a cut scene filmed, but never released in the finished version of Revenge of the Sith, where Chancellor Palpatine takes a walk with Representative Binks, and here's the Entertainment Weekly quote, "And Palpatine kind of thanks Jar Jar for putting him in power. It's a really interesting scene. And it shows the evolution of Jar Jar from this fun-loving kids character into this manipulating politician."
Oh, my.
The Jar Jar Binks of Robot Chicken, my friends. It's true. It's true.
He's going to come back and haunt us all.
And it's an interesting arc for the character that also could have been explored, because the scene is really dark, but it just didn't fit in the movie, which I understand. But yeah, George's take on it is Jar Jar is just now a politician. Interesting, kind of referencing his very diminished role in the Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. Wow. But I'm looking at the Club Jade article here, and it's showing Jar Jar a screenshot of his one cameo in Revenge of the Sith where Boss Nass is behind him, and I'm realizing how far ILM had come along even since Episode 1. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Aaron, what did you think of this article? I mean, would you have liked to see Jar Jar Binks' character evolve like that and really get into the fool who helped cause the downfall of the galaxy?
I mean, I've never been a huge Jar Jar Binks fan. I mean, I don't hate him like some people do, but he's never really been a character that I really cared for. But it sounds like that scene would have been pretty interesting to see, at least if they had included it maybe on the Blu-rays as a deleted scene or something.
Yeah.
I would have liked to see that.
It would have been rather interesting to see what's our fun, lovable Gungan who's pretty okey-day, walking around and always getting in trouble, turn into a manipulative, corrupt politician.
That's some strong wording from Mr. Ahmed Best. But I'm just glad to see him back on the interview circuit. I don't think I've seen any Clone Wars interviews with him.
Cast actually did a interview recently with him.
When was that? Was that this for this season, or was it Jimmy interviewing him for last season? I'm trying to remember.
I think it was this season. It was when they did that screening for
the blue carpet. You're right. That was this season.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yes, a brief foray into the world of Star Wars podcasting. That was a video cast that the Forcecast did. So I'm sure you can find that over on their site. Talking to Ahmed Best. I'm glad you reminded me of that, Aaron. Because this makes two. Two for two with Forcecast and Entertainment Weekly. I wonder if he'll come on our show. Probably not.
Also in the news, Lego has renewed their Star Wars contract for 10 more years. I don't know about you guys, but I'm going to enjoy this.
I can remain in my childhood as long as the Lego Star Wars contract continues.
Yes. Also, they are working on Star Wars The Old Republic products to coincide with the success of the MMO game. Huh. I'm quoting an article done by Roku Depot, which is, this is really interesting news for me. They said, I wonder if we might see a Lego The Old Republic game anytime in the future. That would be hilarious.
My brain is exploding.
You can just see Darth, I'll refer to him as his old nickname of Darth Awesome.
How would that sound like? Because you need the, for 300 years.
Okay,
you need that.
Do it in a Lego noise.
Does that work, Aaron? I don't know.
That's actually pretty good. I believed it.
I would buy that game. I would totally. I'm not a Tor player, but I would pay good money for that game. But I have my original Star Wars collecting in any sort, as modest if I can even call it that, started with Star Wars Lego sets. The first time I ever bought Star Wars memorabilia. And I'm trying to remember the first Lego set I had, and they're blurring together. I do. It was an old. I don't know what year it came out, but it was a sand people from episode 2. And it was this tiny little set with a water evaporator. I don't know.
Huh.
Are you much of a Lego collector, Aaron?
Not really. I really liked Legos when I was a kid, and I loved to build them. And then when I got into Star Wars, I bought a couple of the sets. I bought like the X-Wing, and I built it. But then I don't keep like the packaging for stuff, so I got rid of the box, I got rid of the instructions, and then my nephew got a hold of the X-Wing and tore it apart, and I didn't have the instructions on how to put it back together.
Uh-oh.
So I lost some pieces, and that was kind of the end of my Star Wars Lego collecting. But I have a lot of the minifigs, like the little guys. I have them on my desk at work.
They had a lot of those at Fan Days. There's this booth with tons of them. And I haven't bought any sets in a while, although I was in Walmart the other day and I saw these $10 thematic packages that were based on like Naboo or Tatooine and then had a small little $10 set of Lego that accompanied that. And I saw that in Walmart. I was so tempted.
There's probably like 20 pieces in that set or something.
Yeah.
The thing about Legos is they're so expensive that if you're a collector of Legos, I mean, you have to have some decent amount of money on hand to...
Yeah,
because I think like some of those deluxe sets are, you know, well over $100.
Yeah. They have like they had this huge Death Star that was like $300, and I wanted that so much as a kid. I've spent an inordinate amount of time, actually absurd amount of time, drooling over Lego catalogs growing up. I'll have to get there's a tote in storage with a bunch of old sets. I'll have to get it out. I was that kid back in a couple years ago, before I had heard of the idea of Star Wars podcasting. I had fishing lines strung up around my room, and I would construct these little fixtures that I could then fix my Lego ships to. So I put my Lego TIE Fighter and Lego X-Wing, and it looked like they were chasing each other. And that was good days.
You got to get that in the new studio.
I know. Yeah, it's I think I know what I'm pulling out the next time we go to storage. Okay, let's jump into a little bit of we're going to do this early because we want to fill some time and cover stuff at the beginning of the show, hopefully to help when Mr. Hurlman arrives to talk some Phantom Menace 3D, which is really what the show's all about today. Bethany, we just got an email from our buddy Chris Smith from the Sarlacc Pit podcast, and mm-hmm. he said, "Hey guys, I knew I should have said something. We're recording tonight as well, talking Star Wars 3D. We should have combined our efforts." Well, maybe we should have. That would have been if we were broadcasting on our station, but had them in the Skype call, and then they were recording for their podcast. That'd be kind of cool. It's too late now, but yeah, a lot of.
I hark back to Steve Glosson. It's too late for chocolate pie.
It's too late to podcast now. All right. Let's jump into some feedback. This is somebody who posted on our Facebook page. Robbie Chastain says, "Hope you're up for some feedback. You know we always are, Robbie. Thanks for sending this in." He says, "I'm listening to your episode with the Fan Audio Awards and I'm at the point where you're discussing your thoughts of time travel and the supposed story of some guys going back in time to help prevent Darth Vader from ever existing, and how one of the guys, sorry, I don't remember the names yet. I understand that can be confusing. I still don't even know people's name on the show. he mentioned how very Star Trek that was. That was Mark Herleman, Robbie, joining us shortly. Well, you might be interested to know that it's more similar than you may even think. I remember reading where Gene Roddenberry had actually written a proposal for a sequel to the Star Trek motion picture that would have dealt with the crew traveling back in time, and the subject of the journey was John F. Kennedy. As I recall, in one version, they were going to try to stop the JFK assassination, which would then fail, by the way. And in one version, the assassination was halted, and then they had to go back and fix it with Spock actually being the mysterious shooter on the grassy knoll that ensures that history flows as it should. I thought you'd like to hear that. I'm enjoying your show, and look forward to more from you guys. Thank you so much for carrying on the Fan Audio tradition. Well, thanks for your feedback, Robbie. On our Facebook page, that's the first long-form feedback I think we've gotten on our wall. But that's what the kids call it these days. I say that so facetiously. I'm one of you. I've gradually become more and more tolerating. Can you say that? Is that a word?
Yes, tolerative
of Facebook as I've used it more, and we've been doing a bunch on that. But not back to the feedback. Time travel in Star Wars. You weren't on that episode, so let me ask your opinion first. Is that too Star Trekky, and is that a good thing,
Aaron,
or a bad thing?
Aaron.
I've always disliked the idea of time travel in Star Wars. I know they've done it. They've played around with it a little bit here and there, but they've never done like a pure like travel back in time and change events type thing like Star Trek does. So I would definitely not like to see that in Star Wars.
That story just sounded so weird, didn't it?
I mean, yeah. It doesn't sound legitimate to me, like the rumor about the live action series.
It sounds like a game of telephone for you, that if you get recall from middle school, when people would sit around a huge table and they have to whisper something in one person's ear, and they go all the way around the table and they're like, "The Phantom Menace in 3D is awesome." And that's how it starts. And it's like the plant was fed and lost them. they do, and that's kind of what it sounds like. It sounds like something where they're saying maybe they dealt with a spaceship that did something weird, had a special hyperspace thing that came in from another galaxy a la Yusong Vong invasion, and then that turned into, you know, so on and so forth until the story progressed to something as absurd to me as time travel. Although I wouldn't mind seeing that Star Trek movie. Maybe they've got something for the next Star Trek motion picture. Maybe Benedict Cumberbatch will go back in time for you Sherlock fans. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of crazy, though, the storyline about Spock going back and actually being the one to pull the trigger.
I would watch that.
That's dark stuff right there.
Yeah, Spock is the evil assassin. Actually, Robbie and I went on to have a fairly long Star Trek-y conversation on the Star Wars Report Facebook page, and I mentioned how hilarious I had imagined Spock to appear as the evil assassin. Give him back that evil goatee from the classic Star Trek episode Mirror Mirror, and give him some sort of accent. Russian accent. Give him a Russian accent and a goatee and some sort of and a bow tie. And then picture him as an assassin.
I don't know. Bethany, you're in the wrong calling. I write that script right now. Send it off to what's-his-face directing Star Trek. I bet Bethany and I have seen two Star Trek movies. Quote me if I'm wrong. Have we seen one, too?
We saw Star Trek The Motion Picture, which is the old one. And we saw Star Trek the new 2009
one. The reboot, the original one, and the new original one.
But I've heard that some of the other Star Trek movies are good, like The Wrath of Khan. I know Kinsetta Parker was talking about it with me on Twitter the other day, and she's like, yes, you should watch it. Much better than The Motion Picture.
All right, Aaron, which one do we do? Do we go back and watch the original Star Trek movies, or do we go back and watch the James Bond movies, or the original Indiana Jones? Of those three.
Ooh. Indiana Jones first, and then Star Trek. I'm not into Bond at all.
Okay,
so.
Gotcha. I was just thinking about that. I was listening to the Geek Out Loud podcast with Steve Glosson, and he's going through all the old James Bond movies. But yeah, there are a lot of these old kind of... classic movies, or I guess they're rapidly becoming classic, and these franchises that I'd be interested to jump into. Okay, let's take a segment here, and I'd love to interview Aaron. We're gonna put you in the hot seat in a long time lost episode from last week. Due to technical difficulties, we weren't actually able to even quite finish the episode. It didn't quite come out, and by didn't quite come out, I mean it wasn't released. but in that episode, I got to ask you a really awkward question and put you on the spot. So I think I'll do it again. Because I mean that way. I'll make it a little easier on you. Within the frame of reference of Star Wars movies, comics, books, what is a single character or situation that's inspired you?
Huh.
I don't know if I made it easier or not.
You totally reworded it, but...
I did.
I would say... I don't know. When it comes to movies, like I can definitely separate them from reality pretty well. So it's not like any movie is ever super inspiring to me. But in the reference of Star Wars, I would say probably like during Empire Strikes Back, during like Luke's training... and kind of the advice that Yoda's giving him, some of the lines that Yoda has, like do or do not, there is no try, stuff like that. Those are always things that I guess you could say would have been good life lessons and things to kind of live by. So I guess that would be the first thing I would think of, that training sequence with Luke.
Yeah, that's a very
one
powerful
of my favorites.
Sequence.
Yes. Okay, back to an easier question, one that all Star Wars fans get asked. What is your favorite Star Wars movie?
Favorite Star Wars movie would have to be... It kind of fluctuates. It goes back and forth between the original trilogy movies. I really like all three of those. I think right now it's a Return of the Jedi. That's kind of always been my favorite because I think that's the one that I kind of started out with. Mm-hmm. But it kind of fluctuates. It goes between that and the other two, really. I like them all. Almost equally, but if one had to edge out, I'd say Return of the Jedi.
That's the one that's more common than I would have thought a while ago, but it is many people's favorites.
Yeah, I even had an Ewok stuffed animal when I was a kid, so I like the Ewoks. I like the speeder chase through the woods and the end with Vader and the Emperor and Luke and the conversation that they have there, and the dialogue is great. So yeah. I really like Return of the Jedi.
I will say this, the third act of Return of the Jedi is the best single act, I think, in any Star Wars movie.
Yeah, I would agree.
That may be the case. Yeah. When people ask me what my favorite scene in a Star Wars movie is, I can never really answer. There are just too many
of
them.
That. I've never thought of framing the question that way, though, which I guess we kind of already answered it ourselves, but your favorite act of a Star Wars movie, if you're going to... Because they all divide into three acts pretty well. The Phantom Menace is almost defined. So you almost have intermission. You know, you almost have like two brief intermissions almost in the Phantom Menace. We'll be talking about more of that in a second. Let me ask you this. You're a writer for our website. People should definitely head over to StarWarsReport.com and read some of your fantastic and very interesting, and always they always solicit a lot of feedback and comments. There's a lot of fun conversations to be had there on the site. But of all the articles you've written for us, which one would you say has been your favorite so far?
I like to write those top 10 articles. I've done two of them so far, the top 10 clones from the Clone Wars and then the top 10 expanded universe characters that could be in the Clone Wars but probably never will be. So I would have to say the expanded universe, the top 10 expanded universe characters, that was the most fun, I think, just because I really like the expanded universe and I spent a lot of time with the comics and the books. So writing those articles, I kind of have that stuff in my brain anyways. So it comes pretty easy and I enjoy writing that.
Yeah, well, as a little aside, the chat room unanimously agrees with you in that we should watch Indiana Jones first.
Okay, so, and all right.
Good. I answered correctly.
Yes, indeed. Do you have any favorite type of Star Wars book or comics? For instance, they now have some Star Wars horror novels that we've spoken of in the past, but is there any favorite kind of Star Wars book that you like, whether it's all about Mandalorians and you really like reading about those, or all about the clones and you like reading novels set in the Clone Wars, or whether you like classic Jedi stories or delving into the Sith as has been recently done?
I'll give you a couple answers here because I pretty much like it all, but I really like the Republic run of the Dark Horse comics. That kind of, it started, I believe, in 1999 and it kind of went from there. So right around the Phantom Menace time.
How many issues are there of those?
What's that?
How many issues are there in that series?
I think it was like 72, something like that. I'm sure somebody in the chat probably knows. But I think because it started out as Star Wars, that's what they titled it, and then it transferred over to Republic. But it was all about the Clone Wars and the battles and kind of the nitty-gritty stuff that was happening in the Clone Wars, and I loved that. Like, that was, it really got me into the Dark Horse comics and a lot of the Quinlan Vos storyline is in there, and some really good stuff with Dooku and Mace Windu, and a lot of the Jedi that you just see in the movies kind of in the background are really delved into in this series. So I would recommend, if anyone has never read the Republic comics, to definitely go out and pick those up. I think they collected them in some trade paperbacks, and they have like 9 volumes, I believe, that basically does the whole story. So if you guys haven't checked those out, if you're into comics at all, into Star Wars comics, I would say, pick that up.
I never thought I was much of a comic guy because none ever really just jumped at me when I would pick them up. But until I discovered Legacy, and I got most of the way through the series, never finished it. But that was a good series.
Yeah, and the Legacy comics, the writer and artist from that, what are their names? John Ostrander,
Jandersma. Yeah,
something like that. I never can pronounce her last name, but basically they were kind of the mainstays in the Republic comics as well. So like a lot of the comics in there they did as well. So if you like the Legacy stuff, you would probably like a lot of the Republic comics.
Cool.
Favorite Star Wars novel and why?
Oh, wow.
Favorite.
I really like novels that focus on one character and kind of that character's development. So I would say, I wouldn't say this is my favorite novel, but this is one that kind of sticks out to me. I, Jedi by Mike Stackpole. It's basically the story of Karan Horn, which I don't know if you guys are familiar with him, but
yes,
he's a new Jedi Order era Jedi. Rogue Squadron pilot becomes Jedi kind of thing. So it was kind of a cool book. It's told from his point of view, and it basically covers the Jedi Academy books, the trilogy that Kevin J. Anderson did.
But really? It's
all from Karan Horn's point of view. And it's pretty cool just to see his philosophies and kind of, he kind of doesn't agree with Luke on some things, and there's a lot of cool stuff in it. So I would say that kind of sticks out to me as one of my favorites of the Star Wars novels.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, I'll end with one final question, and it doesn't have to be your absolute favorite, but what is a favorite Star Wars line from the movies?
This would have to be the line where Luke said in Return of the Jedi, where he says, I am a Jedi like my father before me.
Yes.
Like, that always gives me chills when he says that. So why? I would say that's my favorite line.
Bethany caught you while you say, Bethany got to ask the mean question and say, why?
Yeah.
Why?
Why is that my favorite line?
Yes.
I've always, one of my favorite things about Star Wars, and I think the thing that really hooked me into Star Wars, were the Jedi. I love the Jedi. I love, you know, lightsaber battles, just kind of the whole idea of the Jedi and the Sith as well. But I really like the Jedi, and I really like Luke Skywalker, and kind of seeing his transformation in the movies into a Jedi. So when he kind of claims that, you know, he says, I am a Jedi like my father before me, that's kind of like that moment where, like, yes, you are a Jedi. Like, that, yeah, that's why it sticks out to me. And I think that's one of the reasons why I've gotten into the novels and stuff, too, is because the movies, you really just get to see Luke kind of become a Jedi, but then that's it. So with the novels, you really get to see kind of his transformation into not just a Jedi, but a Jedi master.
Yeah.
And, you know, the establishment of the order again and things like that.
It's interesting because in the Star Wars films, you're right. You never really get to see the Jedi. That's kind of left to your imagination. And that's why that moment is so powerful, because you can only imagine the significance. The significance, as the Emperor would say, of that line. And you get really, truly the only, I think, Jedi that we really get to explore, even in the prequels, who we get to see as a Jedi is Qui-Gon Jinn, who's really what kind of, when I was thinking what I thought of a Jedi, Qui-Gon Jinn really seemed to live up to that, because Yoda was very meditative. But yeah, and then you had Mace Windu was very serious, and they would be in combat roles, but I think Qui-Gon Jinn really shows the full potential of a Jedi, and he, little moments like his meditation in the, when he kneels to meditate while fighting Darth Maul, moments like that, and the way he defies the council, the established Jedi order, to follow the will of the Force. And I think that really reminds me of Alec Guinness's performance. So the two things I think really reflect that line, I'm a Jedi like my father before me, ironically don't really reflect in the character of Anakin in the movies, or hardly for the Clone Wars, although more so for the Clone Wars. But that, yeah, more, when I think of that line, I think of Alec Guinness's Obi-Wan and Liam Neeson's Qui-Gon Jinn.
One thing that really attracted me to the character of Qui-Gon was also that he was at odds with some degree to the Jedi Council. He didn't directly disobey them or directly counteract anything that they did, but it showed to me that he was human. He wasn't the perfect Jedi that everybody loved, who always behaved perfectly and never lost his temper, never, you know. To me, it made him human, but still a very noble character, and Qui-Gon Jinn was one of my favorite Star Wars characters as a kid.
Yeah. The most screen time of any.
What the prequels were about, man.
Whoa,
Mark!
The ghostly voice. Speaking of Force ghosts, Mr. Hurlman. I think that's got to be one of my top moments, because I did not see you on Skype. My Skype was minimized, and suddenly I was looking over at my timer, saying, "I hope Mark gets in soon, because we need to get our time in on the Phantom Menace."
Yeah, I just literally just got in, found out that my home computer deleted Skype somehow, and so I had to switch to the netbook. I'm like, oh, can this really be happening right now?
Well, we passed on all the technical difficulties to you, Mark, because we've had none so far.
I know.
Which Woo! Is awesome.
Nice.
Well, we're going to talk about it next, then. We've started it with Qui-Gon Jinn. Let's talk about Star Wars The Phantom Menace 3D. But before we do that, let's thank our sponsor for this week's episode of the Star Wars Report. This episode is brought to you by Jet's Toy Hut at toyhut.com. We talk about them all the time. You know what they are. They're awesome because they sell you Star Wars action figures, and you love it. Because they really are professionals. They do excellent packaging. And now that I've got more space in the studio, I'm going to have to be placing a couple more orders.
I know. It's like at some point it's going to be useless for us to have them as a sponsor because we will be buying so much from them. We might as well not have them anymore.
But that's a good problem to have. You can head over to toyhut.com. That's hut, as in the hoo-hoo-hoo kind of hut. And Bethany, what's our featured action figure this week? I'm actually looking at the show notes and kind of laughing here.
I actually, unbeknownst to you, picked Qui-Gon Jinn,
awesome.
Which is very interesting considering our conversation.
What wave is this particular figure?
Well, I liked two of them. Again, there were multiple ones, and I just
you can't ever
choose.
It's like
one.
It's like Lay's potato chips. You can't pick just one.
Exactly. But the Star Wars Saga one I liked a good bit because it's a full Qui-Gon Jinn figure with a lightsaber, and it's only $7.75. There's another one that I liked a lot that
number
was
two.
Star Wars Phantom Menace. It's a 12-inch Qui-Gon Jinn with a lightsaber, but it has the cloth cloak and clothes
Ooh.
That I really like. And
soft
is,
goods.
Yes. It's $16.50, but
not
I
bad.
I like both of those.
Both of those will be on the show notes for episode 33 of the Star Wars Report. Hey, if you're getting some Qui-Gon Qui-Gon fever like us, you can head over to episode show notes on
little-known Star Wars fact about me.
Okay,
when I was little and I was told to do a book report,
mm-hmm.
I actually went to the library and picked out
this.
One of those young readers' books about Qui-Gon Jinn.
I forgot
and
about
so
this.
And so I researched Qui-Gon Jinn as a kid, dressed up as best I could as him with my little Qui-Gon lightsaber that I absolutely adored.
Well, see, you had the hair.
Yes,
so
I did.
Couldn't do
so
it.
I had long hair, so I did my hair like him too, and proudly gave a book report on Qui-Gon Jinn as a character in a book. And
awesome.
I really enjoyed that. I think the other kids did too. Mine was more interesting than some of the other ones because their parents would make them pick something uninteresting.
Oh yeah.
You know, the thing that irritates me with the Qui-Gon figures, they just re-released, a new Qui-Gon Jinn, and the poseability is just. It's staggering at how you've got characters like Savage Opress, where he's got all these movements and stuff. He's got bendable arms. And then Qui-Gon, who's got like four. And it's like, why? Why can't Qui-Gon get a respectable action figure like the one that they had originally? The one where he's got the little lightsaber, where it's got the little blaster that would click onto it. That's like the best Qui-Gon figure ever. And yet they have yet to come up and make another one that even honors the character as well as he should be.
Yeah.
The Hasbro's Midichlorian count was a little deficient on that one. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's do it. Let's get into it. We're going to talk some Star Wars Episode 1 in 3D. Let's get it started. Let's begin this discussion with Mr. Mark Hurlman. Just literally came in. He is not 30 minutes from wearing those red 3D glasses. I don't know. First question, was it in 3D or did you see a 2D showing, Mark?
I saw it in 3D. I did not get to watch it in real D. I watched it in that Dolby 3D.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure, I'm not 100% here, but I want to say that there is a very big difference between real D and Dolby 3D. The glasses that we had were those little black ones with the stinking, the funny like sunglasses mm-hmm. coloring on it, and of course they don't turn the lights down in the theater enough, so all I could see was my eyeballs looking back at me half the theater. And so I have to admit I wasn't as fun as I was hoping it was going be. I think I'm gonna have to go back to another town where they have real D, because I didn't want to travel the 37 miles to do it, but it really made a major difference. I felt like everything was blurry. I felt like nothing was in focus. I really wanted to say, I want to go out this weekend and rent it on Blu-ray just to watch it at home on Blu-ray, because I really felt like there was a lot of stuff that I was just missing because I couldn't see everything. It just wasn't in focus.
Oh,
and
dear.
I want to say it was those glasses. I've went and saw Real D, where you have the Buddy Holly ones where it's clear and you can see through it all fine, and I loved it. I absolutely loved everything about it. This one, I was just like, sitting there, I kept going, what's wrong? Why aren't I having as much fun with this as I'm having? And my son, I kept having to tell him, put him on. He didn't want to put him on. He kept sitting there taking him off. But I was really stoked, though, just to get to sit down and have both my kids and watch the film. I mean, when we first showed up, there was nobody in the theater. Yeah, it was blasphemy, but at the same time, it was kind of like the Disney experience all over again, getting to go on Star Tours all by ourselves. But then two other families showed up, two groups of two. The grandma and her son, they must have the same issue with the glasses. They left two or three times, came back in, and finally left about 30 minutes into the movie. And so it just ended up being me and my kids and another two people. But it was a lot of fun. I mean, even though I couldn't get into the 3D as much as I was hoping to, just seeing it all big, there were so many things that I was just like, what, is this the Blu-ray edition stuff? I was sitting there questioning because I haven't seen the Blu-ray yet. So I'm like, is this stuff that was added in the Blu-ray? Yoda loved it. I was just everything about Yoda I was loving. Yeah. But I was having little epiphanies because of how big everything was on the screen. At the end, when Yoda's talking to Obi-Wan, he talks about how he himself, Yoda, fears Anakin's training. And the first time that this actually dawned on me that he said that, and I must have watched this movie 108 times, and I'm like, wait a minute, Yoda just said he's afraid. That's not right, Yoda. What the heck?
Wow. But,
you know, I don't know. I got to do some research here because I really think there's a difference between the Dolby 3D and the real D. I've loved the real D experiences I've had, but every time I have those black glasses that don't sit on your face right, there's something happens that I don't know. The effect just isn't the same. And so I was kind of disappointed in that aspect. It felt almost like a comic, one of those motion comics where the things were kind of like layered. Mm-hmm. Whereas like recently, you know, I just recently got Blu-ray. So I've been feeling like Blu-ray is almost 3D at my house. It's like the depth. It's like you're not looking at a TV. You're looking into a window and looking at a room going on. And yet when I was watching it in the theater, I really felt like it was just one of those animated comics with layer upon layer of things moving. And that really was kind of bothersome. I was really hoping for a really cool effect. Though, don't get me wrong, once Darth Maul and the Duel of Fates moment kicked in, from there on, I was like, way through. But
that last
up until that point, I admit, I was starting to fall asleep a few times. My son did. By the end of the movie, he'd fallen asleep. I was like, hey, it's okay, buddy. I had a few times there where I was kind of myself. But I blame it on the glasses.
Yeah.
I've seen this movie enough times that I know it's awesome. It's got to be the glasses.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Mark, but I'm glad that you seem to enjoy it. Did your son enjoy it?
My daughter, the funniest thing, you know, we've watched these movies so many times that the fact that we were all seeing new things for the first time, Maul gets split in half, and my daughter goes, Dad, his bottom fell off for 4 minutes. It's like his bottom fell off, but it's not there. And I turned around and I go, don't worry, honey. In the Clone Wars, he's going to have a robot bottom. And she thought that was so funny.
Don't worry, honey.
I mean, she missed on it. His bottom, Dad, his bottom.
They'll sew that thing right back together.
My goodness.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
I think there really must be a difference between the different 3Ds, because our version was hardly, perhaps there were a few really rapid scenes that I might call slightly blurry, but that was because we had to see it in a slightly cheaper theater, so I knew the screen already. But overall, and that was only, I only barely noticed that. That was a passing thought. And I'd actually forgotten it until you were talking about your experience. But our experience with it was most of it was very clear, very well done.
I'm holding in my
hand. I kept seeing like when Qui-Gon was talking to Watto, it seemed like all the CG characters were really crisp, really vibrant. But then next to him, the other characters weren't, unless they were the focus in that scene. And then they were. But and that's where I just kept coming. I'm like, okay, I've got to go and watch this again on a better theater. And that's disheartening to me because we only have one theater in my town. I got to travel 37 miles to another town just to watch a premium quality experience here. Come on. But, you know, I will say we were talking about Qui-Gon when I jumped into the episode here. I really came away watching it again thinking, you know, it's Qui-Gon's story. The whole Anakin and everything. Yeah, it's all about Anakin later, but Qui-Gon's the one that pointed us all to Anakin, and that really come through to me today when I was watching it, especially when he got to the scene where Shmi turns to him and she tells Anakin, you know, don't turn back. That was, you know, sitting there with my kids, it's just such a powerful scene that she's able to do that. And you see Qui-Gon when he turns and he looks at Anakin as Anakin runs back, you kind of can tell that, you know, he knows he's breaking up a family, but yet he knows he's doing the right thing. And when Obi-Wan is talking to Qui-Gon and they're sitting there over the sun, the planet as it's the sun setting, I don't remember seeing a second moon there before. And I was just like, wow, what was that? And yet Obi-Wan is giving Qui-Gon the lecture about, you know, if you just followed the council and the code, you know, you'd be on the council already. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, maybe Qui-Gon's got a little more future seeing than he's been letting on. You know, he's telling Obi-Wan to keep his mind in the present. Maybe Qui-Gon's been doing a little future traveling or something here, you know. And then aside of me, spoiler territory here, because I did see read Darth Plagueis going into this. That was very exciting for me, all the Plagueis aspects. And when I'm watching Maul and Qui-Gon go at it, and I watch Obi-Wan sitting there, I'm sitting there going, why do they have these little shuddering things again? You know, I'm questioning all these little things that I questioned the first time I watched the movie. That was what was interesting. It was like watching the movie for the first time, even though I've seen it, you know, about 108 times.
Yeah.
And I'm like, when Maul suckers Qui-Gon and pops him in the jaw and then and stabs him, I'm just thinking, no way. No way, because now I know Maul is nothing more than just a bully, you know? He's got skill, but not the skill that I thought he had. And I'm just like, wow. But then when Obi-Wan comes in there, oh, man. Wow. You just kind of feel the power of the Sokka in that battle, man. It was like all the way through it, Obi-Wan, he's doing the feigning and all that with Qui-Gon. But as soon as Qui-Gon's out of it, Obi-Wan takes on a whole new speed. It's just insane to watch when him and Maul – I mean, Maul, when he's fighting Qui-Gon, kind of was casual about it. But when he's going up against Obi-Wan, it's kind of like, okay, this is it. You know, I'm going to finish you now. And yet Obi-Wan is just like, no, it's on. I'm going to avenge my master.
It's
I am
an
Avenger. Avengers assemble. And I was just – oh.
Wow. Yeah, definitely. It's – wow. And I'm glad to hear that you kind of shifted a little bit. It sounded like you did have excitement for the actual movie, which I think was really most people's excitement. But it was fun to experience Star Wars in a new way. Bringing it back, this exactly 1 week ago, Bethany and I went to the Thursday night, and you know, aka early Friday morning midnight release, and somebody else was doing that in Eastern Standard Time, Aaron Goins. What was your experience like at the midnight screening, Aaron?
It was awesome. I actually, February 10th was my birthday, so
nice.
I was able to convince about seven of my friends to go with me. I used the birthday card. I'm like, it's my birthday. You guys have to come.
So, good one.
So about seven of my friends came. We went about an hour early just in case. I didn't think it was going to be that crowded, and it really wasn't. But there was probably about 40 people, I would say. I think I tried to do a head count as good as I could. I think there was about 40 people in our theater.
Okay.
Most of them seemed to be there pretty excited for the movie. There was definitely a couple people there that were just wanting to do some commentary. So you had those people too that kind of came just to kind of mock the movie a little bit.
But, I hope they got their $12 worth.
Yeah, but I thought the 3D was done really well. It's kind of surprised me. I was not expecting that much from it. It didn't really pop out at you. It was kind of more it kind of fell in more than it popped out. There was definitely scenes that would kind of pop out, but it didn't have any gimmicky, you know, lightsaber in your face or Jar Jar's tongue in your face, nothing like that.
Yeah,
which I kind of expected them to throw at least a couple of those in.
Mm-hmm.
And there really wasn't any of that.
No, not really. We had a similar experience, Aaron. We went to the theater locally here in Fayetteville, Georgia, and I mean, it's not by no means a huge city. We're a decent drive south of Atlanta, and there were about 30 or 40 people there, and there really wasn't anyone at our theater who went to a midnight showing of a Star Wars movie to mock it. I'm actually kind of surprised to hear that, Aaron. But I remember. We walked in. I actually wrote a. You know, you guys know me. I hate writing, but I actually wrote an article for the Star Wars Report website. And when we arrived, there was this very nice lady who was at the counter, and we walked up to buy our tickets, and we did get our popcorn and nachos. And I whispered over to her, aren't there some like special glasses that you get for the screening while they last? And she had this look on her face, and then she surreptitiously stepped into the back room, the back room behind the concession stands. 20 men were murdered. And no. and then she didn't come back out because there are other people at the concession. She came around. She went through some room and she, like, I turned around and boom, there she was on the other side of me, behind me. But, and she was literally concealing beneath her vest a pair of Star Wars 3D glasses, which I just took a picture of myself wearing them while podcasting. I think I'll have to tweet that out. But yeah, she handed it to her. She said, now we're not supposed to give these out. Don't tell anybody. You can't give them out till tomorrow. And I'm like, really? You're going to deprive the people who spend the money to go to the midnight showing the special edition Darth Maul 3D glasses? But she gave them to us, and that was very awesome of her. And we proceeded inside, and we just had an awesome time. The first thing I wanted to talk about briefly is the see how much time we got. We got some time. Talk about the audience reaction. You mentioned that, Aaron. We had a decent crowd, and it was pretty diverse ages, although I would say the majority were about 25, 28, and under. Interesting little observation I made. I was trying to take a look at who would come to a midnight showing of a Star Wars movie, and I think those are people that would have been 10, 12 years old when it originally came out. So that might be, maybe I was imagining things, maybe not, but Jar Jar got some laughter, not for his stepping in poodoo jokes, but for his initial appearance, his initial introduction to Qui-Gon, where he's like, "What are you, brainless? I speak. The ability to speak does not make you intelligent." That got some laughs. There was hushed chuckling, although I appreciate it that people weren't jerks about it and always... Like,
yeah, there was no one in there smirking about it or.
Well, I remember even at Celebration when we went to the episode one screening, there was this one guy who I believe was only passably sober, and by that I mean very slightly drunk, who was doing a lot of yelling in the back of the theater, just randomly doing commentary, and most of it was actually pretty funny. But there was a point when the Midichlorian scene happens, and Qui-Gon's explaining them to Anakin. On the docking bay in Coruscant, and Anakin's like, "I don't, Qui-Gon, sir, I don't understand." And he's like, "What the hell did you I?" And that actually got some genuine, that got some laughter from the theater. But nothing like that at the screening. But the part that just warmed my heart is that there was like the brum bum brum bum. And Lucasfilm screen, and I was like, "Yay!" And I began to put my hands together. It's like, "Oh, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the one." Awkward clap. But no, it is like one. So I heard a noise behind me. That's like a little, and then slowly after that I heard a couple more in the background, and then there's this like really hesitant, "Are we allowed to do this? Can we?" "Oh, okay, all right." And then everybody burst into applause about as the Lucasfilm logo was fading away, and I was just it pleased my inner heart. And the same happened when the end credits rolled. There was a standing ovation. And by standing ovation, that's pretty easy to say because everybody has to stand at the theater when they exit. But I'll stick to my story. Everyone clapped and stood up at the end. So it was a fun experience.
Couldn't you say that's a standing levation?
I guess you could.
Hey, now, okay, again, I haven't seen the Blu-ray one, but during the Gungan fight with the droids...
Mm-hmm.
This was the first time I noticed the whole group of smaller droids. Like at the end, they were rounding up the body parts of the other droids and stuff. I did not recall ever seeing them before until just tonight. I'm like, whoa! Where did these droids come from?
You'll notice those, Mark, at the very beginning of the movie in the halls of the Separatist
ship. I did.
But I did not notice them until the DVD viewing. Not when I saw it on VHS, but when I saw the DVD. Then I noticed it. Those are actually pretty funny. Let's talk a little bit of technology behind it. You talked about you were a little disappointed in the Dolby experience. I'll say this. The 3D experience I was very pleased with. I did kind of notice something that you said, Mark, and that it was a little layered. Like you could see, oh, here's this background and that background. Because John Knoll and those guys at Prime Focus, you know, painstakingly said, now this goes in the foreground, this goes in the middle ground, that's in the background. And so it did kind of have a slightly layered look. Before a conversion, I thought it was a really, really good movie. I think it was comparable to the only other 3D movie I've seen, and that's Tron when it came out. I saw that in real D, and I would say it was comparable. I guess overall, there were no in-your-face moments, but I'm going to jump over and really quickly run through, and this will kind of kick off our discussion of the 3D aspect of it. My top seven, this is from an article I did. My top seven were The Escape from Naboo, love the Royal Starship, Darth Maul Spy Probes, which is kind of a random thing, but there was only one time in the entire movie when something flew out of the screen. Not even in your face, but just kind of flew out of the screen in 3D, and that was that one shot where the spy probes fly past the screen. And actually, I could have stood for a little more, honestly. I heard a lot of people appreciating the fact that they weren't too over the top, but I might be like a background financial thing, but part of me is like, if I spend a couple extra bucks for 3D, I kind of like the idea of some things busting around the screen. So I thought that.
Yeah.
What trailer was it where they threw something out of the screen?
That was a Thor trailer. Yeah.
I cringe. I covered my head, yeah. Actually.
Number three is the pod race. Goes without saying. Number four is the entry into Coruscant. That doesn't compute. All the wide shots of the planets, the way the planets were kind of tucked back into the screen, and it was like you're looking out a viewport of a spaceship. The Theed Hangar, you really got a sense of the size of that. And really, if you look at the behind the scenes, you can see that they actually constructed the Theed Hangar with a little bit of blue screen added here and there. But they constructed the whole thing where the initial confrontation with Darth Maul happens. And you really got a sense of the size. And of course, two final things, the Duel of Fates, awesome. And of course, the last, very, very last, Augie's Municipal Band. I like the confetti kind of floating around. That's kind of cool.
Wait, not the Senate building itself inside the Senate chamber?
That was a good one.
That was pretty impressive. Well, I had the lousy.
Those were the ones. Aspect. I took my little Phantom Menace notebook and took notes while I was doing it and just kind of scribbled the ones that jumped out to me. So let's talk about what were some of your favorite 3D moments. Let me throw this one to Aaron. Were there any moments that stuck out to you?
I have two that, other than some of the ones you mentioned, actually the pod race. Was part one of the 3D things that I didn't like as much because I felt like that's where it got kind of blurry.
Yeah.
At certain parts.
Yeah.
But for me, the opening crawl actually looked awesome in 3D.
Oh yeah, I forgot about
that.
Yeah,
that was
like,
amazing.
The way it opened and you see that and it's kind of just floating, like that's the way that opening crawl I think should have always looked. Like it looks perfect in 3D. But so I love that. And then the only other thing would be there was a scene where it's kind of an above shot of a platform in Coruscant and you can see the depths of the city. Like you can literally see like all the way down like the side of a building. And I thought they did that shot great. Like you can just see the depth. It looks like you could fall right into the screen.
Yeah.
So those are two things that kind of stuck out to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are the main seven for me. Bethany, what were some of your favorite moments?
I would say the words, yes, but that was a very close tie for me with the duel at the end, Duel of the Fates. That was an amazing scene in 3D. And I don't know, I really enjoyed the whole movie very much so. Thoroughly enjoyed myself going and seeing it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk some finance. I'm the finance nerd. I have no idea if anyone else is interested in this kind of thing, but I wrote up a couple numbers on the film because I want to see how it did. How did The Phantom Menace do? Because we know the box office kind of depends on whether they want to continue doing the yearly 3D releases. I think that's upset a lot of people. I mean, I don't think that. I know that's upset a number of people who wanted to see the original trilogy first. Although I think on the other hand, if you started with A New Hope, everyone would be probably equally upset. So I think people may have gotten over their anger by the time the A New Hope comes around. But anyway, let's talk some finances. The movie is currently at U.S. domestic total is $24,500,000, $495. This is at Box Office Mojo right now. Not too shabby, I dare say. There were four big movies opening this weekend. It was fourth. but only by a slim margin. Its biggest competition and what came in third was Journey 2, The Mysterious Island. Dwayne Johnson.
Oh, really? Himself. That beat out Star Wars?
Yes, for but, shame. Well, let's see. And so it's currently sitting at $31 million compared to Star Wars' $24 million. So it's pretty neck and neck. Although I will say this, because I have to get into the really, really nitty-gritty details. Journey 2 opened on with 3,400 theaters showing it. Phantom Menace opened with 2,600 theaters. So if adjusted gross per theater, the Phantom Menace wins! So the Phantom Menace is victorious. I'm really spinning the numbers, but... I'm like a politician here. I've got to spin the numbers. They can look good. Of course, now, Rachel McAdams' movie, The Vow, and Denzel Washington's Safe House were both far and away in first and second, each making about $15 and $20 million more than these two movies, respectively. Which is kind of expected. You've got... Those are very different demographics.
Expected what? Those movies, they sound lame. Come on, Star Wars.
Well, I know, but they're different demographics. You got the big action movie for the guys in Safe House, and you've got the rom-com. I'm assuming it's a rom-com. If it's Rachel McAdams and it's called The Vow, I'm assuming it's a romantic comedy.
I'm curious now.
First action adventure movie. She's an assassin. I vow to avenge my father.
Rachel McAdams is the Vow Hunter. So yeah, that's a bit of finance. I think it's good enough though. It's
a rom-com.
Okay, see, I'm right. Right as always. No, I'm kidding. Journey 2. One other interesting note is that Phantom Menace has done reasonably well internationally. It's now approaching $50 million if you count the international box office, most of that coming from England. But a reasonable opening weekend. We talked about a little bit about this in the pre-show, but there was a lot of marketing money going into this. I mean, I don't think you could drive through any major city without seeing the... Bethany and I saw the big billboards promoting it. We saw bus stops down I-85 in Atlanta that had this along each of the bus stops. So along with your... Bethany, insert name of women's female hygiene product that's always advertised. Ah, I'm blanking.
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Right next to the Alo. I'm showing my ignorance here. Right next to your hand cream advertisement is your Star Wars Episode 1 3D advertisement. That's what I'm trying to say. You saw it everywhere. I kept seeing reports of we saw a Super Bowl trailer. We saw all kinds of advertising promoting this release. So a lot of Lucasfilm marketing money and might went into this to really make it competitive with new releases. Think about it. This movie's 12 years old, and it's being re-released, and it's probably publicly the most ridiculed Star Wars film of all time, and it did this well. I think it's I would call it a success overall. And technically beat Journey 2 in terms of a gross per theater.
Well, actually, how much did it make worldwide?
I didn't write it down, but it's approaching $50 million when I looked at it on Box Office Mojo. Let's look at, but in contrast, it came out in August 2008. The Clone Wars movie made $14 million compared to the Phantom Menace $24 million, so a $10 million shy, and that was the Clone Wars, a new Star Wars film. There wasn't nearly as much promotion behind it, but I think it just goes to show you. We said it in the pre-show. I'll say it again. It's the way they promoted it, showing the parts of the Phantom Menace that I think people do like and forget about in their hatred of Jar Jar and the politics and the Senate scenes. They forget about Darth Maul and they forget about the pod race and these things that they really did promote.
I just had a really random idea, but concerning the Phantom Menace, what if someone who could do a Gollum voice, mm-hmm. really good one, which right. we know a couple of
yes,
those.
Yes, we know you. We're talking to you, Tyler Michael Johnson.
Yes, we are. What if he were to go over the Phantom Menace and redub all of Jar Jar's lines in a Gollum voice?
You really?
Oh my goodness!
I wish this was video.
I'm like thinking this through.
Okay.
Riley's expression was
priceless. That's called incredulity.
Oh wow, Riley, that was wow. so worth your expression.
The ability to speak does not make one intelligent.
Oh my.
Wow.
When are you thinking we're in trouble?
Wow. I really reconnected with the film, though. So, yeah, there's I'll end the financial nerd part of it. But, I think it's exciting. It's definitely enough, I think, to where Lucasfilm will continue. I expect an announcement very soon where they'll confirm it. We've already seen, I saw this on Yakface, the website, where they had already leaked the packaging marketing scheme for 2013. Like 10 months from now, they've already, and it's a, you know how they have the Darth Maul packaging on a lot of the Star Wars collectibles now? It's going to be Yoda packaging. So I can kind of predict where they're going with it when they promote Attack of the Clones. They're going to focus on the ever-popular Yoda versus Dooku duel, and I think they'll hype the arena scenes, and not as much, and they won't focus as much on the romance aspect of it.
I think it would be interesting to know what number were they shooting for? What number were they hoping to see?
I know.
For this release that we can get the next one.
Let's call up Mary Franklin. I wish.
So, I don't know. To a degree, didn't they do that with Red Tails? I mean, Lucas said there was a number they wanted so he could hand it off to the guys over there so they could do their films. And he was like, if it's really successful, all action movies will be black action movies. You know, he had a number for that. So, you do have to wonder if Lucas does have a set number in mind.
And how long are they going to make us wait until they announce that they are definitely doing episode 2?
I know.
Probably.
Like, is it something they're going to tell us at Celebration? Is that something that
would be neat.
They're
gonna
tell us
do it before Celebration because they want to get the Comic-Con hype in and they want to – I think they want to start –
Wait, is Comic-Con before Celebration this year?
Yeah. I think it's in July each year.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess I'm pleased. Although, 40-something, almost 50 million. Almost 50 million – is nothing to sneeze at. And I mean, I can't even imagine it costing that much. It cost about $100 million to make the first time around, according to what Rick McCallum said a couple weeks ago, which is actually somewhat low the Avengers will probably cost $200 million to make. It's just astounding sometimes.
That's going to be so cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but let's take a look at it. You got me all curious, Bethany. If I go by weekend to weekend, do you want to guess what Red Tails opening weekend was?
I don't remember.
18 million. 6 million shy of the Phantom Menace opening.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Of course, granted, that was in the dark months of January. And we've got, this is February. People, I think a few more people aren't thinking of, they had spent all their money on Christmas gifts.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting, too, is with this re-release, the Phantom Menace is probably going to pass the original Star Wars movie on the all-time, at least domestic, chart.
Well, like right now, the total domestic lifetime gross, adding this release, putting it all together according to Box Office Mojo, $455 million in America alone since the Phantom Menace was released. Yeah, so I'll put it this way: for the haters of the Phantom Menace, people who just really don't like the movie, and thought it would make nothing. I can think of 24,500,495 reasons to make Attack of the Clones. Keep going through these movies. So bring it on. I really think they will make Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, I hope they get to the original trilogy.
Yeah,
that's the main thing I think that most people are waiting for.
Yeah, yeah. I'm right there with you, Aaron. I think the original trilogy, especially those like Return of the Jedi, the fight scenes there, and
I would love to see in 3D, though, is the opening sequence of the Revenge of the Sith. That would be amazing. That scene blows me away every time with the long extended shot.
Yeah. Oh,
I agree. I just want them to have the kitchen sink fly at me this time.
I think they could have been a little bit more bold with it.
Well, I remember Lucas said in an interview in our lost episode of the Star Wars Report that we covered, he mentioned that he didn't want the 3D to be, quote, gimmicky. And that's what he was afraid 3D was at first. And then he said watching Avatar and seeing some other films like that showed him that it could really work well and not just be, oh, random object thrown into the audience's faces and then be normal the rest of the time. So I think Avatar definitely showed us that. And I think the Phantom Menace looked there, quite well.
There are a few people who have George Lucas's ear, I think, when it comes to filmmaking, and some of those people include include Jim Cameron, as he calls him, and I almost said Indiana Jones, Steven Spielberg. Da, 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 da. And so actually Digital Spy had an interview with George Lucas talking about Star Wars The Phantom Menace 3D. Let's take a listen.
The Phantom Menace and the subsequent two movies were the backstory for episodes 4, 5, and 6. And because I wasn't going to make it into a movie, I didn't write it in order to fit the technology. So if it couldn't be made. And now that we had developed digital technology by that time, and I was free to basically do anything I wanted, I was able to go to places that we already talked about in the last three movies, Coruscant, the capital, and the fact that there are aliens everywhere, and all those kind of things that I had to put in a little tiny bar that was very controlled. Now I could open up the world and have aliens everywhere. I love the story, and I love the fact that I was able to tell the entire story of Darth Vader. And I think it really rounds out the whole series and tells the full story of what happened from the beginning to the end.
Anakin Skywalker, meet Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Hi, pleased to meet you.
Why does somebody who starts out being good become bad?
Your thoughts dwell on your mother.
Afraid to lose her, I think.
What does that got to do with anything?
Everything. Fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.
Whenever you're at the leading edge of technology, there are things that you try to do, but you can't get them done, either for lack of time or lack of money or lack of being able to advance the technology where you need it to go. And that was the genesis of going back and finishing off some of the things that were half finished in the first three films. In the second three, there's very little that, because of the fact that I had more time and more money and more technology, there are very few things that actually were left to work on and improve. One of them that we did improve was that we were trying desperately to get a digital Yoda into the first film, Phantom Menace. We just couldn't make it work. So we came close. We got Jar Jar and Sebulba and Watto and a lot of other characters, but we couldn't get Yoda because it was much harder to do. And so when we finally did get it that accomplished, which was before the second film, we went back and put the digital Yoda back in the first film as it was intended to be.
May the Force be with you.
The second trilogy was a lot of fun. It was challenging in that we were pushing the boundaries of technology, but that was exciting. I mean, we were doing a lot of things that could never be done before and moving into areas that we didn't know where we were or what was going on. And that was fun. It was exciting. It was like an exploration of the unknown.
Star Wars Episode One: The Phantom Menace 3D. Only on the big screen.
Da, 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 da.
Wow. One thing that I've always really liked about George Lucas is he's an inventor. He's always pushing the boundaries as to what you can do with technology, what you can do in his field of expertise. And he seems to really love it, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And he talked about the digital Yoda there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was such a huge improvement when you watch that movie on the big screen and you see the digital Yoda as opposed to the puppet. I mean, the puppet, for me, that was almost unwatchable how bad that puppet was.
it was pretty bad when they fixed it.
That was a huge... I mean, it makes the movie so much better when you have that digital Yoda.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a huge improvement. Actually, while I was listening to that interview, I pulled out that little notebook that I had scribbled on during the movie, which is remarkably bad handwriting because I couldn't see what I was writing. There were a few things that jumped out to me watching this movie again, and it was like watching it, not for the first time, but it was seeing it in a new way. And something that's interesting about technology of filmmaking is that there is an eye progression to the movie, and that what's on the screen, your eye is going to be focused on one particular thing. So it's going to be like if Jar Jar is being, for instance, there's the scene when they're the panning shot when they're entering Mos Espa, I believe, or Mos Eisley. I believe it's Mos Espa, and that panning shot when Jar Jar infamously the first time he steps in some icky icky goo. quote. But you'll see that in even though it's in the lower corner, Jar Jar is the focus of the scene, the way it's panning, and your eye is focused on Jar Jar. You're not looking at one of the Eopies on the left side of the screen. You're looking at Jar Jar being very goofy. And in the next shot, when it cuts, the focus of the screen is going to be on the bottom right corner of the screen where the action is going to begin to progress, and your eye will then track up. This is all very scientific, and I have no idea what I'm quoting, but I've noticed this. I'm an interview with Andy Notko, or a podcast he did. You can find it, the Inako Almanac, on iTunes, and he was talking about this kind of technology. And I found it very interesting because that wasn't the case in the way I watched The Phantom Menace. I've seen it so many times. I think it's the movie I've seen the most of all the Star Wars films over and over again. I had this kind of progression that I watched it in. And seeing it on the huge screen and seeing it in 3D really changed the way I looked at it. And I guess the best way I can put it is that you did get a sense of a little bit of motion blur and a little bit of blur in the backgrounds, but whatever the John Knoll, when, you know, choosing what was going to be in the foreground and clear and what was going to be in the background and maybe a little bit fuzzy, was not necessarily what I was always focusing on. So I remember there just being these moments where I really got to see the film so much more clearly, and that really changed how I saw it. So I noticed a lot of differences. The dynamic performance of Oliver Dvorak Davies as C.O. Bibble. No, I'm kidding. You must contact us. Contact me. That guy's awesome. But yeah, that was a one moment that I noticed is that Jar Jar kind of has this Pete the Dragon effect. Anybody, you know what I'm talking about, Mark.
Yeah.
But yeah, it kind of, because for those of you guys, Pete the Dragon's old Disney movie from the 90s or 80s or somewhere, something we used to watch as kids. It's been years. Yeah. I'd forgotten about it. What happened, Bethany?
I couldn't even get halfway through that movie.
Oh, God. What are you talking about? Now, that is a fine piece of cinema. I take offense to that. No. Pete the Dragon. But it was one of those pioneering films when Disney was first animating characters that were acting with live-action films. Of course, just 2D animation. But it kind of reminded me of that because the characters really interact with Jar Jar well. You really buy into it, as much as he might annoy you. And I really bought that. But I guess seeing the film in this kind of clarity showed me more things. Like, in the case of Jar Jar Binks, I was finally able to notice where the CG wasn't quite there as much as it was in Attack of the Clones, and especially Revenge of the Sith.
His eye stalks?
Well, the eye stalks a little bit, but just the texture of his skin where you could kind of see a progression. It still holds up, I dare say, to a lot of films today, but the technology wasn't quite, you could kind of see it. That's the only thing I could notice that was aging, mainly on the Gungans, Boss Nass and Jar Jar Binks. I noticed it a little bit, but it didn't take away from it. And like I say, that doesn't take away from the fact that I think it still holds up really well. And now, the movie... Oh, go ahead, Mark.
Well, you know, Aaron was mentioning the digital Yoda. Did they add any changes to the dialogue? Was the dialogue exactly the same as it was before?
It's identical to the Blu-ray, and the changes from the DVD are slight, other than the Yoda one. I'm not sure. I'm not even aware of any great ones. So no, I don't. It's pretty much, other than the digital Yoda, the same movie.
See, I found Yoda's performance through this so much better because of the CG of the character.
Oh yes.
The way that he talked, suddenly the way I interpreted things were, like I said, he said fear at the end, but when he was talking to Yoda, to Obi-Wan, he seemed angry. I mean, he was really upset about things.
Yeah.
So it was like, I was really noticing that his performance stood out, all because of the fact that they changed the modeling. You know, that just that one little thing changed so much about how I perceived that character through the film, and I loved it. I absolutely think that was a great improvement all the way around. You know, that's one of those things that George comes back and tinkers with something, and he really does a good job. You know, and you know, he gets a lot of flack for, like, when they add a wall here and then they forget it on the next scene, and yet, you know, they do this, and I don't think we say enough about how awesome those little changes are, and I really, really enjoyed what it did, especially in that end scene when he's sitting there going, agree with the council, I do not. And I was just like, whoa, Yoda's angry. I mean, it even gave him like a little jowl effect. I loved it. The attention to detail.
Screech to a halt. Screech to a halt. I just got a notification of the email inbox because I haven't been able to watch the Skype as we're discussing this, and I just noticed that Nathan Patrick Butler said I was tagged on Facebook. You're it. He wrote, just figured out that Riley and Bethany from the Star Wars Report saw the Phantom Menace 3D at the same theater I did. It strikes me that we must be much closer than we think. Now I don't think it was the same time because I don't know if Nathan saw it opening night, but that's crazy. Crazy. All right, I got
two
more.
It would be funny if you guys were in the same theater. Yeah, you know that guy that was making all those comments?
That guy. He was that guy. I've got two more things that I noticed that were new. Or maybe was it three? I'm trying to read my handwriting here.
Writing in a theater with 3D glasses on in the dark.
Yeah, it may not have been the best idea. Here we go. Two things. I really reaffirmed how charitable Qui-Gon is as a Jedi, unlike any other Jedi. You know, Mace Windu's kind of a jerk. Obi-Wan is very much sticks to the rules. Yoda is very thoughtful and thoughtful, but not necessarily the kindest of the Jedi. Qui-Gon has a true sense of kind-heartedness, a nature that really shows his character. He's a charitable man, and that really shows through.
He goes out of his way to try to help Anakin and his mother.
And that has nothing to do with 3D, but he's to help Jar Jar. You know, another pathetic life form we've picked off. You know, Obi-Wan is so sarcastic. We can kind of see where the Hayden Christensen Anakin got his streak. You know, because Obi-Wan's kind of sarcastic in Episode 1. Do not defy the Council. Not again, Master. Not again. This reminds me of that time on Kato Nemoidia. No. That doesn't count.
Can you imagine Anakin with a British accent? No.
No.
Not really.
All right, here we go.
But I was taking moments when Anakin and R2 were flying around in the space battle to envision the different Anakins from the Clone Wars, from the movies and stuff. And for once, I was actually seeing Anakin. Like, I almost saw the little kid go, quiet, Snipes. You know, because I was finally there. I could see it, finally. After, you know, getting from Episode 1 to 3 to the Clone Wars and back again, I finally caught on. Yeah, okay, I can see that it's Anakin. It's not just Anakin has grown up, but I could see the character from the 9-year-old that they play on later. And I really think that's a good, you know, that's a testament to the Clone Wars, you know, the modeling and stuff like that. You know, they don't really follow every character that well, but those little things are the things that they really focus on. And I like that about that character.
Yeah, definitely. You know, two more things and then I'll open up the floor. These are as I read off my poor chicken scratch. One is that I noticed, back to the 3D technology part, in real D it was a little dark compared to the Blu-ray, but it wasn't too bad. I removed the glasses and would watch a little snippet here and there, and it would brighten up a bit, but pretty much it would just correct back to its standard brightness when you took off the glasses. I think it would almost be nice if they had kind of lightened the tone of the film so that when you put on those real D glasses, it had the print of the film kind of popped a little bit of color. Not to give visual effects advice to John Knoll or anything, but that was something. And then one other thing is that I didn't realize that Christian Bale had gotten his career started so early. I swear that was Christian Bale voicing Sebulba. Nah, nah, I'm Batman.
I kept pointing to my daughter. Well, that's Keira Knightley from the pirate movie. That's her.
Yeah, I've looked for that before too. It's really interesting to see this. It's Star Wars behind the scenes information is always fun, and there's so much of it too.
Yeah, it's kind of a random connection. We're watching the BBC Pride and Prejudice right now with the family, which is kind of a connection because of Keira Knightley's in the newer Pride and Prejudice, who's in Star Wars, who's in Pirates. Anyway, Anyway. Well,
it reminds me because, like, the scene when Jar Jar grabs the frog and it flies at Sebulba, I kept sitting there. I always do this too, but in the middle of the theater, I'm sitting there. I turn to my son and I go, don't you just want Qui-Gon to yell it at Voss? And he looks at me and I'm like, that's Quinlan Voss right there. And he's the guy with the yellow. That's that guy on your bookshelf. I'm like, yeah, it is. It was so funny that for like 5 minutes, my son's just like totally like, oh, we got to go get him and bring him. I'm like, no, buddy. He's at the house. He'll be right there. But, you know, I get that way where even though I know how the movie's going to go, I still kind of like, quick, Qui-Gon, give him like the code. Give him the code. Yeah. Give him like the nod, you know, like, I see you, buddy, but you're undercover.
You know? Yeah. Well, there's still moments like that where every time I see the Phantom Menace and the force fields at the end with that separate Obi-Wan from Qui-Gon, where Obi-Wan's trying to get to Obi-Wan and to Qui-Gon and Darth Maul. And I'm like, run faster, run faster. Oh, not again.
Exactly. Slide into home.
You know, one doesn't want to lose a leg now, but yeah. So let's go ahead and wrap up with some final thoughts. I'll just say this. Seeing The Phantom Menace in 3D was an amazing experience. I really did see the film in a new and different way. And I loved seeing it in 3D. It really, not just the fact that it was 3D, but it changed the focus of the film. And I saw it a little in a new light. And I couldn't be more thrilled that it did very competitively well at the box office this weekend. And I think that's a good sign. I think we will see Attack of the Clones 3D coming next year.
Yes, hopefully so. I really enjoyed it as well. And yeah, I'm very happy to say that it's my first midnight release of a movie, seeing a movie in theaters that way ever. And so now I can always say that my first midnight release was a Star Wars movie, and that's nice.
And I never thought we'd get to say that. Yeah, that's amazing. Your final thoughts, Aaron?
I thought they did a really good job. I had a ton of fun going to see it on the big screen again. Anytime you have the opportunity to see a Star Wars movie on the big screen, it's always a good time. I'm not super excited for Attack of the Clones. That's my least favorite of the Star Wars movies.
Oh, dear.
So hopefully we can skip ahead to
Revenge
of the
theater.
Sith pretty soon.
Just come into the theater right about the arena time, and you'll be happy.
Yeah. Or Jango versus Obi-Wan or one of the better parts.
Attack of the Clones has great moments, but I think you're thematically and as far as pacing goes, it's one of the more off of the Star Wars movies. But I'm still looking forward to seeing Yoda fighting off Count Dooku and seeing Anakin lose an arm, seeing all those awesome scenes, seeing Palpatine truly come to power as Jar Jar hands it off, and yes, seeing Anakin whine about sand. I'll watch it, I will laugh and have a good time watching it. Your final thoughts, Mr. Mark Earleman?
My final thoughts, I definitely have to say, if you've seen this in 3D and you didn't like it, check and see if it's the Dolby 3D. I have a feeling that that's probably why.
Yeah.
I've never had a bad experience with real D. And like Aaron said, you know, anytime you can go see Star Wars in a big theater is always a win. And so just for that experience alone, getting to take my kids and having the theater all to ourselves, it was a great time. $40-something down the drain, it was still a good time. But yeah, if you're a naysayer and you didn't like it, maybe it's that style of glasses. That was it for me, I'm pretty sure, in a nutshell as to why I didn't have as much fun with the 3D action as I could have. But all the way around, it was a winning experience.
Yeah, definitely. And it is in select 2D theaters where 3D is unavailable as well, for those of you who gives a headache or something like that. Yeah, that's going to wrap up this episode of the Star Wars Report. Good times being had by all. I'm so glad that you're able to join us, Aaron, and so thankful that you got in time to talk to us, Mark. That's awesome time as usual. But I missed Whistler. Where did Whistler go?
Yeah, he's trying to repair the other computer at the moment. He's kind of upset with me. I kind of delegated him to fix it.
There he is.
Right. Yeah, you're doing a good job. He's got the Google little flashing thing back up and going. I don't know what's going on. Maybe the whole thing's crashing.
Well, you know, Google's privacy policy is changing, in case you hadn't heard.
Oh, no.
They're always, I'm doomed. They're always changing. I think everybody's heard by now. wow. Well, you've been listening to Star Wars Report. Listen live every Thursday night, 8 o'clock. Middle Earth Network Radio. Follow our Facebook and Twitter page to get more information. We're just the Star Wars Report. It's easy to find us. posting all kinds of awesome stuff on Facebook, like a video tour that I recorded of our humble new studio setup where I finally was able to get some Star Wars collectibles where I'm recording Star Wars content each week, which is awesome. Hey, also, you can find us on StarWarsReport.com. That links you to our Facebook and Twitter. That's where you'll find our email address, which is StarWarsReport@gmail.com. Leave us some iTunes reviews. We always appreciate those, especially the five-star ones. Those are even more awesome on the list of awesome. But any kind of reviews, letting other people know about the show. Thanks once again to Joy Hut for sponsoring this episode of the Star Wars Report. And hey, Attack of the Clones next year. Here's hoping. Here's hoping. Well, thanks everyone for tuning in. And remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast. See you next week, folks. Salacious crumb come from.
Oh, that is so creepy.
Good times. Thanks to everybody in the chat for tuning into this episode. Wow, crazy times. Good times, folks.